Money FM 89.3, best of weekends. International News Review.
Good morning to Steve Okun. Welcoming him to our International News Review. Steve, lots going on in the world.
Lots going on. Good morning, GVZ. Good morning, Neil.
Good morning. Wait. How come he gets a cool acronym and I'm just Neil?
What's cool. That about? Cool acronym. Well, okay.
Abbreviation.
You know, it's like JFK, right? You need three initials, right? Yeah, like JFK, or even, you know, Bill Clinton was WJC, and H.
NJH. It doesn't sound as good. Middle name John.
NJH.
Still doesn't sound as good.
Moving right along.
Yes, please do.
All right. Our first story, I think, is fascinating because it's not something that's necessarily new, the topic. But the way that it blends business with politics, with culture, I just think is fascinating. This past week, John Cena, the former wrestler, now actor, was in a press conference talking about his new movie, and he referred to Taiwan. He just said the word Taiwan and country in the same sentence, and the internet blew up. What happened, Steve?
Well, and so what John Cena has done really is almost achieving the impossible. He's united Democrats and Republicans in Washington against him. So very hard to do that right now. So John Cena is promoting his new movie, Fast and Furious 9. And you have to keep in mind, mainland China, is the biggest movie market in the world now. It surpassed the United States. Maybe the U.S. will come back after COVID is passed. But right now, China, the biggest market in the world. His movie is there. It's doing extremely well. It's grossed about $150 million. So he's on a promotional tour, and he was doing an interview with Taiwanese media, and he said Taiwan is the first country to watch Fast and Furious 9. And that set off the firestorm in China.
One little word.
But this is fascinating to me, Steve. I am a box office geek. I've always followed the figures and everything. And you're absolutely right. There has been a clear shift in the last 2 to 3 years towards the Chinese market. Scenes are now frequently filmed in China. Matt Damon made movies in China. A lot of American stars are going over there. And you're right. Cars, big thing in China. The Fast Saga. Don't forget, this is the 9th movie. And you're right, it earned $135 million.
That's a whole other question. Should there be 9 of these movies?
But this is the thing, right? A 9th movie in the franchise is the first $100 million-plus opening for a Hollywood flick, not a Chinese flick, for a Hollywood flick in China since Avengers Endgame in 2019, April. Now, of course, we've had the COVID pandemic in between, but it just shows you the importance of China to the Hollywood box office now, Steve. But the bigger issue here is this not part of a longer trend where, how can we put this? Hollywood's moral authority is dubious at best when it comes to box office. It's all about the numbers. They've censored movies to China for years. Even the Friends reunion, which premiered on HBO Max yesterday, had scenes cut to appease Chinese censors. This is part of a longer trend, isn't it, Steve, where it's kind of dollars before any kind of moral or political authority.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that's where businesses have to walk a fine line between, because if you're going to do business globally, which includes China, you have very different rules, very different sensibilities between those two markets. And so where do you draw the line between balancing and respecting a culture and then getting into self-censorship? Where John Messina just made such a fundamental mistake. Now, this is a guy who's been studying Chinese for 5 years. This is somebody who has 600,000 followers on Weibo. Right? And so he should have known.
He's fluent in Mandarin. I mean, he made these comments in Mandarin originally, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if you watch on Twitter, you wouldn't call him fluid in Mandarin. He's trying. We'll give him credit. He tries like I try, right? But he's really trying. And so you've got to know that you can't refer to Taiwan as a country. And so you've got to be prepared going into a press conference in Taiwan. You practice. You say, the Taiwanese are going to be the first people to watch the movie. If he says that, none of this happens. Instead, he says Taiwan is going to be the first country. So now you've got the blow up in China. And so now you have to apologize for making a mistake in China. But he goes way overboard in this apology. His apology says, he says, I've got something very, 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 very important to say. I'm very, very sorry. That then gets you the backlash in the United States.
Yeah.
And you get a Democratic Congress, a Democratic senator calling the apology outrageous. You get a Republican senator calling the apology pathetic. So now he's got people mad everywhere. And it's a mistake he should have not made. And Neil, this is different. You know, not referring to Taiwan as a country is very different than saying, well, we're not going to have a Chinese villain, or we're not going to say anything negative about China in a movie, right? This is even worse.
Yeah, of course. Pinchez commenting on Facebook Live, if he didn't make the apology, China could offend, could be offended and make things difficult for Fast and Furious in the future. Unfortunate, but possible that that would happen. And look, let's be clear about Hollywood's motives have always been about the dollar.
Of course.
There's no altruistic movie producer out there. Everybody wants to make money, and they have to make money. But it is interesting that that this has blown up the way it has. And like you say, and even people on the mainland were offended. So he literally offended everybody, and it'll be interesting to see if his apology will smooth things over, at least with the mainland audiences and the government.
But the apology was interesting because I saw the apology. He didn't actually say what he was apologizing for, if I'm correct, Steve, which upset people even more on both sides. You just get saying, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, but I'm not telling you why I'm sorry.
Kind of, I made a mistake, but I'm not going to tell you what the mistake was. Yeah.
Right, because the people in China, some people in China wanted him to go further, saying Taiwan is not a country. Taiwan is part of the mainland. And he just said, I'm sorry for what I said. I respect China. I respect the Chinese people. I made a mistake. I really apologize for it. It's just how he did it, how overboard he went. But this is a mistake that should not have been made. And he made the mistake on both ends. And so obviously, you know, it's his responsibility. But who is ever prepping him is a public affairs and a communications person. Yeah. You know, Glenn, your head must have been exploding watching how bad this was.
Unbelievable. Yeah, just unbelievable. And he thought he was doing the right thing. And anyway, yeah, we'll see where it goes from here. Let's move on to.
Well, I'll say one thing. Sure. I'll just say one thing. But businesses have got to learn on this. You have got to be really thinking before you start talking, even in any market. How is this going to be viewed in Taiwan? How is it going to be viewed in China? How is it going to be viewed in the United States? How is it going to be viewed in Singapore? It is much more difficult today to work in business where you're trying to sell into two different markets. And when you have the United States saying now the era of engagement with China is over, we're into a new era, it's going to become even more critical for businesses to be looking at their websites, to be looking at any public statement, thinking how's it going to be seen by everybody. And Neil, I think to your point, we're going to see a lot more self-censorship now, and we're heading into that direction.
Which is why the work you do at McClarty Associates is so darn important, isn't it, Steve? You wouldn't say it, but I can say it for you. Helping companies navigate these treacherous waters.
Are you going to hand the money over on air or what?
No, but you're right. You're right, Steve. The public affairs people, which are generally attuned to these issues, spend a lot of time and effort looking into these and figuring these things out. And unfortunately, for one Hollywood actor, he didn't quite get that one right. Okay, let's go to Myanmar. The junta is now getting its payments stopped from the gas project that Total and Chevron are involved in. The latest shot across the bow to try to get the military government there to stop the violence against civilians.
Well, and I guess Myanmar continues to get worse and worse and worse. There's now guerrilla warfare in Yangon for the first time, where you see soldiers being killed in the city from the opposition. And you had, for the first time ever, one of the armed ethnic groups working with the People's Defense Force. So you see this, a coalition coming together to fight the military. And so with all of that happening, the military now stepping up their killings against civilians, you've got companies now starting to say, well, maybe we're going to have to step back a bit. So Chevron and Total announced that they'll suspend cash distributions to one of the gas companies that's affiliated with the military. It's not a lot, but at least it's a first step that companies are going to have to stop playing the game of, well, we're helping the people, we're not supporting the military. But how do you do business in Myanmar where you're working with the government?
And that's the key word there, Steve, isn't it? It's a first step. I was just reading that Justice for Myanmar, an activist group there, has welcomed the decision, obviously, to suspend payments, but also pointed out that it's only a portion of the revenue that those companies take. But it is a first step. I mean, do you see this being a stepping stone for other companies to follow suit?
Well, I think you're going to have to see government step in and really put in sanctions with teeth before other companies start to pull out. There's a big date coming up, which is this coming week, where the school holidays in Myanmar have ended and the students are supposed to go back. And there's now, you know, the opposition is saying, don't go to school. You know, teachers shouldn't show up. And the military wants the teachers there, wants the schools open. So there's a real tension point coming. And this could be a breaking point where it tips over into that situation where you start to head closer to civil war than a lot of people thought possible. Certainly than we, when we talked about it, you know, 2-3 weeks ago, there's all this optimism that ASEAN was going to step in and it was going to broker peace. And it's getting worse. And you may start to see sanctions coming in where it's not just the more narrowly targeted ones against the military and their families, but broader sanctions.
To be clear, there wasn't that much optimism. it wasn't really going to happen. I think not just from us, but from most people. But anyway, your point is well taken, Steve. You know, all of this is made more difficult by the fact that, you know, big projects like gas and oil projects cost, you know, hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars in infrastructure that has already been in the country. So for them to make the statement, I mean, knowing what's potentially at risk, which is they could lose their investments there, that is a big sign, I would say, from an international conglomerate.
Right, from the gas fields, the Myanmar earned $3.3 billion. I mean, this is what is keeping the military government afloat. And if that money goes away, but then what does that do to the people?
Right.
I mean, if you don't have energy, you don't, right? How are you going to cook?
That's always the question.
So, and then even for the hospitals, I mean, the COVID situation in Myanmar apparently is getting a lot worse. Obviously, there's not good reporting coming out of there, especially as the military continues to arrest more and more reporters. So you've just got a disaster brewing, and it needs a lot more international attention than it's been getting.
Which was the exact point that Total made, in the sense that, yes, if we cut off the production of gas, we cut off the electricity supply to the local populations of both Myanmar and Thailand. Or is that what we're going to do? We're going to literally turn the lights off on their own people? They can't do that. And further to that, Steve, we've got a very interesting question from one of our viewer listeners, Ian Chan. He says, Steve, what can ASEAN members do, if anything, for peaceful resolution in Myanmar? There's a big one for you, Steve, on a Saturday morning.
The $100,000 question right there, isn't it?
Well, I mean, that's where if you know, Thailand were to come in, if the neighbors were to come in through ASEAN and say, you know, this is not going to last. We're going to help structure some agreement and bring the parties together. Maybe that is would give the military a way out, because the military right now sees this as an existential threat, and maybe ASEAN could help broker it. Now, maybe not, but it would be best positioned. But if the junta knows its neighbors aren't going to get involved, it has less incentive. So you have to try something. And that is what ASEAN had tried to do, you know, at best half-heartedly. The junta ignored them. They're going to have to come in and step up the pressure more. There is no easy answer, of course. But ASEAN's best situated to do something, and they haven't done anything yet that we are aware of.
Well, Trish Craig also weighing in. Do you think we will hear more from the Singapore government, since Singapore is one of the largest direct foreign investors? Early on, it was Singapore, Malaysia, and Indonesia made a pretty strong statement in the early weeks of this, but then they kind of went into the ASEAN grouping in terms of. I don't think that I have seen anything directly from solely the Singapore government toward Myanmar. Have you recently, Steve?
Well, not recently. I mean, I think, and the question is, what is the Singapore government going to do? What is the Singapore, are the investors going to do? What are the Singapore customers going to do? You haven't seen that yet. You're starting to see it, the beginning of it, with international businesses come in. You've seen, you know, investors who had projects pending pull them out. but what are the existing investors going to do? And are you going to see that type of pressure come in yet? It's just starting, and that's something to really watch.
Yeah, we'll wait and see what we see from ASEAN in coming days as well. Okay, let's move on to our final topic here this morning, and that is a Bloomberg piece that came out this week. The richest people in Asia are pouring into Singapore. The billionaires' playground during COVID is the super rich are choosing Singapore as the world's safe haven is the title of the piece. Money sloshing around like never before. It's not coming toward me. I don't know who it's coming toward.
These guys listen to us every Saturday morning. They're listening now, I believe.
You know, slosh some money up toward Tobio.
Yeah, slosh it this way.
But we're seeing, you know, it's kind of a typical story about how Singapore is a safe haven during uncertain times. What do you take away from the article, Steve?
Well, my favorite line in the article was that, you know, Mount Elizabeth Hospital has a UOB privileged banking center in the lobby. Right? What other countries have hospitals? Because that's where, but everything is relative, right? And if you look at Singapore, where's the best healthcare in the region? It's here, right? If you look at vis-a-vis Hong Kong, where you have political stability, where do you have certainty, where are you not going to have fear that there's going to be a national security law being used against you? It's here. So it is a pandemic piece, but I think the article also mentioned long term, this is the best place to be, where you have rule of law, where you have transparency. But it also talks about you have the downside, which is the increasing income inequality, and you have the haves and the have-nots. And so it's a strong sign for Singapore that the government here is doing a very good job, but it is also going to bring challenges.
Well, that's the key point. I mean, the statistic that stood out for me, I love the one about the banking. I've seen it in the lobby at the hospital. It's
both hilarious. Our kids were born there, so I've been walking right by that many
times. You see, he's one of them. He's one of them.
Right.
Yeah. But this is the one that gets me.
I'm definitely not one of them.
I know. A Singaporean car dealer said that a Chinese client bought a $1.1 million Bentley sight unseen and just bought it over Facebook. Said, I'll take that one. He didn't look at it. He didn't see it. He just paid the money, $1.1 million, and it was bought. Now, that's the rich side. But on the flip side, you've got someone like Sito, the founder of Makan Sutra, who's every day saying that hawker sellers are going under. They can't adapt to the technology. They can't, you know, they can't have a Grab app for them. It doesn't work. So on the one hand, you've got guys buying million-dollar Bentleys unseen. And on the other hand, you've got guys who can't survive selling $3 plates of noodles. What are the potential repercussions for that?
Well, I mean, it's you're seeing that play out everywhere. I mean, the whole rise in the super rich, and then that you're not getting that disbursement down through, to the rest of the people, and then you're building up resentments, and so that's something Singapore is really going to have to address. The same as the United States has to address it. The same as China has to address it. And right now, Singapore has done such a good job with the pandemic, certainly compared to any of its neighbors, that you get more and more people coming here, especially from India, from Indonesia, from Malaysia, right? This is the far and away the safe haven. And so you get all of their money is coming here with them. But is that money trickling down, right? Does trickle down economics work? No, it doesn't work. And so how are you going to balance everything? So, you know, with all of this, you know, great show of confidence for Singapore, it's now got new challenges that it's going to have to address.
Indeed. All right, Steve. Well, we're waiting for some of that money to slosh our way collectively. And maybe we should just go hang out in the lobby of Mount E and just see if anything just kind of comes our way.
I'll just sit there with a bowl or something. You know, just sit by the ATM machine. I'm on Money FM.
Please,
I'm on Money FM.
Please, sir.
Yeah. Can I have some more? Can I have some more?
More porridge, please.
Oh, my word.
All right, Steve. Thanks so much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thanks, NGH.
There we go.
International News Review. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.